Welcome back to this week's episode of Toys on Tap. We are bringing on T-Cat. He creates the Fidgy Figs Zero, an incredible fidget-style toy that is unlike anything you've seen with its 3D printing, resin printing, magnets, articulation, ball joint, all the things that you would want in a toy. That's what it is. And the best part about it, as his gift to Toys on Tap and the podcast listeners, if you want to get your hands on this toy, which is absolutely incredible, promo code Toys on Tap gets you 20% off. So I'm really pumped about that. If you want more Toys on Tap, you can jump on all socials at Toys on Tap. If you want even more Toys on Tap, you can jump on the Patreon, patreon.com/toysontap. It's where you find the nitty-gritty, it's where you get digital downloads, all kinds of stuff. And if you want to support the show in a free way, you can rate, review, subscribe wherever you get podcasts. Now let's get to this week's episode of Toys on Tap. Dude, I'm pumped to talk about your toy, because your toy is one of the like most well put together toys in that I've seen, which is like from the box design to all this stuff. Like, holy moly, you nailed it, dude.
Thank you. Yeah. That means a lot. I mean, especially coming from you. I mean, you've got your hands on so many toys, so I'll take that as quite the compliment.
Yeah, I got too many toys behind me. but yeah, I'm assuming you've heard an episode of Toys on Tap.
Oh, I've heard many at this point.
Yeah. I mean, awesome.
I'm kind of new into the whole, I mean, serious toy design as far as like really putting effort into it. I've made things in the past, but I discovered your Instagram, or you discovered mine, and then I went to yours, and then I was just like, wait a minute, this is a whole podcast and everything? Oh man, like, and then I just started listening. So
yeah, and it's crazy to think like how big this really is.
Oh yeah.
It's like constantly growing, and there's, man, it's hard to describe. I remember getting into it like 3 years ago, and when you first tap in, you're only in your like sphere,
right?
And then it, which includes maybe like five people, and you're like talking to them and trying to figure out how to do things. And then over like the course of like 3 years, you realize that your sphere was nothing. And so it's crazy to see how big it actually, and how many countries it's in. It's so crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
I, at the moment I can, I think it's like 40 countries that I know where artists are.
Wow.
Yeah. That's, so
it's incredible.
And people will hear all about your story on six of the continents. So I'm pumped about it.
Like I said, I'm pumped too, man. Like, this is exciting for me.
But before we get started, like everyone else, please introduce yourself. Tell us who you are and what you do.
Well, I'm Travis from T-Cat Toys, and I just love making things. I always have, and I just kind of on a whim thought of a kind of an action figure idea, I guess, and that set me down the path of just exploring what it would actually take to make something. And of course then it just I just was like, this isn't good enough, and I just have been growing and learning ever since in it.
Yeah, and I mean, your toy is so unique in how it functions, and magnet placement versus joint placement versus like it's just so unique in what it is.
Thank you.
Yeah, and it's cool, the mixture of how they all work together, but we're going to get there for sure. We're going to get there. Take me back. You're a kid, growing up. What toys you playing with, all that kind of good stuff?
Oh, I myself was really big into the X-Men action figures in the 90s.
Heck yeah.
Love those things. Love them too much. I mean, I collected them in the sense that I wanted as many as I could have. Mm-hmm. I never had as many as I wanted, and I played with them until they fell apart. And yeah. So, you know, just, and some of them I played, probably I helped that along, you know, just throwing them around and stuff, just to, you know, do my little action scenes and things like that.
Yeah. I can't tell you how many action figures, like just slamming them together when you're yep. a kid and yep. the arms come out or.
Oh, yeah.
I remember I had this Cable toy mm-hmm. and his, I don't know what had happened to his body, but the sonic welding around him had broke, but it broke like absolutely perfectly.
Yeah.
And so yeah. You hit him too hard and he like a crash test dummy, like falls apart.
Right. And it was
one of my favorite toys for a little bit because you could replace the arms and do whatever you wanted to with them.
You actually reminded me of, a toy that I really loved, which were the little, I don't know if they were Hot Wheels or Matchbox or maybe just a completely different thing, but I think they were called Crash 'em Ups.
Mm-hmm.
And they had the little flipping parts. So it was like, it would be nice and pristine. And then if you bumped it, it rotated and it had damage on it.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. And
they were die cast. Yeah.
I think it was. Yeah.
Cause they had some that like would like break, like they would like fold too.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. They had some that like kind of folded like that. They had the bumpers that flipped.
Yeah.
And I used to love those just because that was the intended purpose, was to just like smash them together. And
yeah,
me and my little brother would actually, we would get on either set end of the hallway and just try to roll them at each other and try to actually hit. But yeah.
Yeah, I there's a guy that as a kid, like I wasn't ever super into Hot Wheels, but I was into the tracks and all that.
Oh yeah,
all that stuff
for sure.
There's a guy on TikTok now that has sped one up and put motors on it, uh-huh. so that like he'll launch a car and it just goes right into the wall and just like it's my like as a kid that would have been the highlight.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Yeah. So you have those toys, all those X-Men toys. At some point you get rid of them all. You sadly. Yeah.
The ones that survived.
Yeah.
Eventually they got put in a box, taken to Goodwill, or maybe they were sold at a yard sale and never to be seen again.
Yeah. At what point do we get back into toys? If we ever do, because I think are you a collector at this point?
I wouldn't call myself a collector. I mean, okay. I still really love toys. I do have a very small collection of toys that are more based around, I guess, experiences and events that I've been to. I went to BlizzCon in 2010. And so I have a couple of little statues and toys from there. Just things like that. A couple of pop figures, you know, but as far as collecting goes, like it's always been one of those things that I've wanted to do, but I've been able to talk myself out of financially, you know, because I'm the kind of person that, and my wife will attest to this, like if I get set on something, then I want to dive all the way into it, you know?
Yeah.
So. It's been a battle I'm winning though, on the 3D printing front, you know, because that stuff's, it's not cheap, but I always have an excuse. Oh, I could use another printer or this higher priced filament or, you know, that type of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, to not get back into toys and then eventually end up making a toy is wild.
Yeah. And you know, earlier you talked about like having kind of a small sphere. I had getting into actually creating a toy, I had the smallest sphere. Like I knew there were other people that made toys, you know. Mm-hmm. I knew there were toy artists. I'd been to a handful of toy art shows, so I knew that existed. But at the time I start creating the Fidgy Fig, I'm not talking to these people. I'm not reaching out to these people. I'm just so focused on designing something that is in my head. And it wasn't until I got to basically the point I am now where when I started to really launch it, that I was just like, man, like, I really did this the hard way. Like, there's so much wealth of knowledge out there. There's such a great community out there. And I'm just sitting here in my office, you know, just tinkering all day when I could be like getting involved in the community and actually talking to people who have experienced a lot of the same challenges that I'm trying to overcome. And they've already overcome them. And, you know, maybe in a way that I'm never, ever going to think of if I just sit here by myself. So, yeah.
Yeah.
It's been an experience.
With like design and spinning, because I mean, we're going to post about this toy all week because the design aspect is crazy. There's so many moving parts. There's joints that are, I mean, the ball joint system. There's pieces of it that like fidget. There's magnet fittings. There's everything that you could want in a toy or that has been in a toy as in one toy. So the design aspect is crazy. Did you study design or something in college?
I did go to the Art Institute for literally one semester with the intention of becoming a game designer.
Yeah.
On the art side. And I've never had a mind for programming. I tried to dabble in programming and I just, it is too logical and mathematical for me. I'm far away from that side of things, but I really was like, I want to figure this stuff out. So I do have an art background. I have worked as a graphic designer. I have a certificate in UX design that I've never used or put to use in any way. I just took a course on it just because I thought it was smart. But as far as physical, tangible design, mm-hmm. like everything I've done is 2D and digital up until basically this.
And this is the first toy.
This is the first official one. I've posted on my Instagram if you can see the original what I felt was a finished toy at the time. Mm-hmm. The original Fidgy Fig, which centered around, it actually used two magnetic spheres, and that was where it articulated at basically the center of the body. Mm-hmm. And then it had arms and legs, no hands, no feet. Well, it ended up did having feet at one point, but no head. It was basically a torso that was rounded off. And I just was like, I want to make something that is kind of figuresque, but its main purpose is to just fiddle and fidget with.
Yeah. You know,
so that's the one. I actually tried to launch it on Kickstarter. And I think I set a target because I had read some article when I was researching Kickstarter stuff. I'd read some article that said set a low target so that it reaches it quickly, and then that'll put it out there to more people, because Kickstarter has this page where it's like projects that are already funded and you get featured on there if you're already funded. Made sense to me. So I put it at $1,000. And this is with me only having one 3D printer that was not really capable of producing at the level I would need to produce. Mm-hmm. And so I ended up basically canceling that project before it fully funded, because I realized I was going about it the wrong way. And I think I also realized that I was not 100% satisfied with my design, and I didn't feel comfortable taking people's money without having a really polished product. So I scrapped it, and then I spent literally 2 years really diving into learning CAD software and using those types of programs for 3D modeling. Because with this figure, I have to be really precise with, you know, because the magnets and everything being inset and the way the tolerance is on the ball joints and everything. So I really wanted it to come down to, you know, the fractions of millimeters in order to make it work.
It's crazy to, and I like, I think to speak to this, super admirable to cancel a project. Oh. I think that like sometimes especially as a toy maker, we're like, we can power through this. If I don't know how to do it, I'm going to learn how to do it on the way.
Right.
Bitch, that may be true, but most cases it's not true.
I mean, I was pretty bummed about it for sure. Yeah. Definitely felt a sense of shame because, you know, friends and family and strangers had backed me on this project.
Mm-hmm.
And then I put out like an update and said, hey, I basically am going about this the wrong way. I didn't do my math correctly. I'm not actually prepared if this thing funds to provide what I say I'm going to provide. And I need to step back and start and come back again later. Mm-hmm. And here I am.
And you did it. I think the cool part too is to then take like 2 years and really figure it out. Because even my own mentality, if I saw that it was getting funded, one, I'm not stopping,
mm-hmm.
which worse, way worse. secondly, I think if I canceled it, I don't know that I'd come back because I like there's so much weight that goes into like then I got to relearn everything to figure out how to do this. But you did it and you came back and now we have a podcast episode all about this dang toy, which I'm pumped about. And so I have so many questions, especially you as a toy maker now, mm-hmm. And you being in the larger community. One immediate first one, are fidget spinners something or like fidget toys something that you like love, or is that why this got made?
I do tend to fidget naturally. I'm the guy that's always, if I've got a ballpoint, a clicky pen in my hand, I'm clicking it. You know what I mean? That's just, I mean, and that's not uncommon. That's a lot of people, but I've never really been a big fan of a lot of the fidget toys that are really popular, like those mm-hmm. little popping things, the fidget spinners and things like that. Like, I didn't find myself utilizing those mm-hmm. for fidgeting purposes. But I did recognize that they're extremely popular. And I was like, what if I built kind of a collectible toy that's kind of its intended purpose and made it into like an actual collectible action figure that I can release multiples and they're each one kind of unique and different and have different features. And then that spawned into, oh, what if they were interchangeable? So I need kind of a universal system to make sure I can interchange these pieces. And it just kept going from there and became more and more complex. And
you are definitely a toy maker at the mere fact that you made something and then said, but we can make it better. Like that enough, like says that you're a toy maker. So how did we get to, I think as we look at your design and all that stuff, we're kind of at the beginnings of TCAT.
Yeah.
So how did we choose the name? What is TCAT?
It's a name I actually used to hate, by the way.
Some of us get stuck with it. Mine's Yucko Toys. So we get stuck with it. Yeah.
So I mean, I've always had just pretty normal jobs. At this point, I was working at, this is probably around 2010-ish, 2011, mm-hmm. and I'm working at Big Five Sporting Goods, and I'm friends with a few other employees, and they started being like, hey, what's up, TCAT? Because my name is Travis Catlett, so they just started calling me TCAT, and I didn't like it because my first instinct when I heard it was just like, that sounds like someone who wants to be a rapper or something. You know, I'm just like, I wasn't really feeling it. And then I was on my break, however many weeks or maybe a couple months later, and I'm just doodling because that's what I would do on my breaks. And I ended up drawing basically the logo that I use now. And I actually liked the logo so much that instantly I was just like, I kind of love this name now, and I kind of want to make that my moniker. And so I started signing, I was doing paintings and stuff at that time. So I started signing my paintings, T-Cat. I would draw that little logo on there, and it just kind of became my overall branding.
I really thought you were going to say, and so I became a rapper. I got really excited.
Nah, I have some skills, but that rapping is not one of them.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it'd be cool if I could rap, you know.
Yeah.
I'd probably be able to sell my toys a lot better if I could rap about them.
Yeah. So T-Cat really, I mean, the company, it sounds like, didn't start with toys, just centered around art and some kind of creative expression of sorts. Yeah. And so to do the pivot from painting or that kind of stuff to making a toy, that's a jump. I think every time we jump from one art form to another, it's huge, and people don't understand how big that is.
Yeah.
What was the thing that made you do that jump?
I think it came down to kind of the communities. Like, I feel like when I'm at any type of convention or convention-esque scenario, if it has to do with toys, like, I feel at home.
Yeah.
And if I go to like an art gallery, I feel out of place. Even when I was just as traditional of an artist as you could be, you know, I would spend my afternoons painting on canvas, and I would put my art in art shows, and I would go and attend these art shows, and I never felt like I was supposed to be there. And I just thought, oh, that's just my own, you know, self-consciousness or imposter syndrome or whatever you want to call it. And I fought against it and fought against it. But then I go to like these toy things, and I'm just like, I love it here. And I want to be part of this, and I want to make part of this. So yeah, just feels more natural to me now.
Absolutely. And I mean, toy conventions, it is, I mean, going to Designer Con and stuff, I've just never been in an art community that wasn't, or that was like this. I mean, I started out painting as well, and I did murals and stuff. And I live in San Diego, so there's a big, what it feels like is there's only so much wall space. So we're going to fight for that wall space. Right. But that means that we're not collaborative anymore. We don't care. Like, we're just going to get up there.
Yeah.
I think the toy space, and why it feels so crazy to be a part of it, is because I've yet to meet someone that says you don't belong.
Yeah.
No matter how bad or how good the toy is, it's like, this is where, okay, you fit. Great. Now find your own little niche. So it's pretty cool. So I definitely get that as a whole. Empire Blister.
Empire Blisters. Specializing in action figure blisters. 2.75 inch or 1/18 scale. 19 different styles. Two sizes of clamshell figure cases. Four different bulk pack options. Quantities of 100 sample packs available. Empire Blisters. Now functions. Toys on Tap. That means a 10% off coupon on checkout. Use code Toys on Tap 10. That's TOYSONTAP 10. Empire
Blisters. Yeah, you nailed it.
Yeah, and it's like, I mean, we all come across any number of minor issues, people like infighting or whatever, but it clears up quickly. There's little to no drama. It's awesome. It's a place to be. Have you been to a lot of toy conventions and stuff? And like,
I haven't, and I'm itching to go, especially, you know, now that I'm neck deep in designing my own toy. I just want to go and see what else is out there and just be like, I mean, I feel like now more than ever, I can value the amount of work and effort that goes into it, you know, and just seeing the way people overcome certain challenges and ultimately create something that was just an idea in their head and turn it into something physical that you can hold in your hand. Like, yeah, I think it's worth celebrating, and I would, love to be able to go more.
Heck yeah. So you make the jump, and you are deciding you want to do toys, and somehow we settle on Fidgy Figs.
Uh-huh.
And we settle on zero.
Mm-hmm.
Because we like naturally fidgety and that kind of stuff.
Right.
This is an undertaking. Like I've described right. how many pieces are on this. Like I just found out that at the joint in the body, like it comes apart. I saw a video and I was like, oh my gosh. So we're talking multiple parts. Some of these parts not only are connecting pieces, but they have things fitting on top of them.
Mm-hmm.
How do you even start? Knowing that all you want to do is make a toy that kind of fidgets and like moves and you can do, where are you starting?
I started, originally I really wanted to just make something that had that the two larger halves of the toy, the mm-hmm. torso and then the waist down. I just wanted that to be magnetic so you can like pull it apart and click it together magnetically, because to me that's a satisfying sensation. Yeah. I enjoy doing it, and that's where I started. That's all I wanted to do. Like originally the arms and legs were just going to be arms and legs, and if I could figure out how to articulate them, that was going to be amazing. But then once I kind of had that built, I realized like it didn't feel like a cohesive toy to me. It felt like the magnetic part at the torso just kind of didn't need to be there. So I had to make a decision, either get rid of the magnetic aspect of it and just build an action figure to the best of my ability, or go all out with the magnets. And that's the direction I went.
Yeah. And when you did it, I think what's why I love this toy is it feels like, do you know what an armature is?
Mm-hmm.
It feels like an armature for a NECA figure.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Like how, because they're so articulated, and it mm-hmm. feels like the toy that they create, and they're like, this is how we're going to make it function. Mm-hmm. Add the stuff to it.
Yeah.
Which I'm all about that. And it like looks like the black and white look great. Having the design aspect and then having the idea. So we figure out we want magnet heavy, even doing the arms, you have multiple joints in the arms, you have multiple joints in the legs. How are we figuring out that, even as something as simple as like, how did you figure out you wanted to do ball joints versus any number of joint systems?
Well, the ball joints ended up being the way to go for me when I decided that I didn't want to just have to, how do I say it? Because I wanted to focus on collectability.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I've always loved, like I used to be really big into Magic the Gathering. Mm-hmm. And my favorite part was a new pack of cards. You don't know what's in there. You know there's cards in there, you just don't know which ones. So I wanted to bring some of those elements. And so when it came to designing the joints and things like that, I wanted something you could take apart, put back together, because I knew I wanted to have a series of figures ultimately that you collect and interchange and build. So I was like, what's the simplest way I can make something that you can take apart and build and rebuild? And that's how the ball joints came to be.
Yeah. And it's really clever. Like,
thank you.
If no one has told you that, really clever, because the ball joints make it, I think it's funny that you said Magic, every card game or every, what do they call it? TCG, all of them do the chase aspect.
Right.
And so in designing this, when you're saying like, oh, I want other colors and stuff, you've developed a toy where you just have to develop a new hand, and that's what they buy to add to their figure.
Right. Yeah.
So genius, because now people could just say like, I need a blue version of this. You got that?
Right. Yeah.
I do for $20. Yeah, I do. Yep. And so as you're designing this, you've kind of nailed down how we have how the joint system works and the arms and stuff. I think I'm really interested in you talking about size because,
right.
Yeah, the schools, right? Like 375, 5.5, 7. How did we settle on this size?
Accidentally.
Okay.
I started designing, honestly, without a specific size or without a specific measurement in mind, but more so, I knew I wanted it to be somewhere in between G.I. Joe and the 90s X-Men figures. You know what I mean? Okay. So like what, like the three-ish, a little over three, and then the 90s X-Men were like somewhere around five-ish or something.
Somewhere in there, yeah.
Yeah. And so, because to me, it also played a part that those X-Men figures were also very, very muscular. So they were really bulky. The wrestling action figures at the same time were really bulky. And so I knew I didn't want to go that big because in my mind I was going to have to make it broader and everything, which wasn't necessarily true. And so I ended up starting, I think my original figure was about 3.5 inches or so tall, and it felt too small, especially with everything I wanted to do with the armor pieces and all that stuff. So I just scaled it up a little bit, and I think I ended up scaling it up like 2 or 3 times total during the prototyping. And I landed on this size, and it just felt good. Like it felt right.
Yeah, it's a good size. I think 375 has a tendency to feel small. And I don't know why. I don't know. I mean, maybe it's because I'm an adult now, and so that, like, it just feels smaller. But this has a good feel. This is a real good feel.
Thank you.
As you're designing this toy and you're settling on this, you all of a sudden go balls to the wall on two other design aspects. And it's packaging and shipping. And then as a celebration for the release, print this massive one.
Right.
And give it away.
Yep. There's two like that. One's right there.
Yeah.
The one I gave away. And then one of my coworkers saw the big one and was just like, I have to have it. I will buy one from you. And he wanted it in black. So I made it for him.
Which is crazy. Like that's a great way to celebrate and launch, to give away something like that. And the packaging is enticing. And it looks like you designed it. And And you put all the magnets in it and all that stuff. And the zero on the front. It's crazy because it's just a, like, if someone saw this, they'd be like, oh, it's just a box.
Sure. Yeah.
But there are two parts in this that it's so well thought out. There's something that clips around the waist of the figure that holds it into the back. And then the stand for the figure that has the addition on it that goes in the bottom.
Right.
So in never designing a toy, how did we even come to grips with this is how it was going to go? Because those are some well thought out things.
For me, the process is always just, I discover the problem after I start, or after the point I think I'm going to be finished, I find the problem, and then I got to figure out how to solve that problem. So I knew I wanted it to come with a stand. Originally, it was going to be like just a metal disc that the magnets would adhere to. Somewhere along the line of design, the packaging, which originally was just going to be basically a cardboard box, I was going to have it made through a company that does packaging. I realized money-wise, because when you do something like that, you know, you got to order the hundreds or the thousands. So it's cost-effective per unit, but overall, that's a lot of money to fork out for, you know, me who's just doing this for the first time. So, first I was like, okay, well, what if I 3D printed a box? Okay. So I 3D printed a box. And then I was like, okay, what if the lid to the box was magnetic? Okay. That fits in line with the theme of the figure. And then I was like, okay, but where am I going to put the stand? Because the metal discs that I was going to use are too big to fit in this box. And I don't want to make the box bigger because then it's really awkwardly too big for this figure. So, okay, what if I design a stand to fit in the box? And then it became like, oh, what if the stand is in there and it's already on the stand? And then it was, I was just going to have just foam in there, but it would still wiggle around, and it didn't really feel secure and polished. So I was like, okay, how do I get the figure to stay in there and be stable and not be bouncing around? And that's when I figured out there's that little gap at the waist of the figure. And I was like, I could just put like a tension clip there and it'll snap right in. It's held onto the stand. The stand I'll design to fit the exact contours of the box. Close that up. Nothing's going to move. And it really, I mean, it was a long process to do that, but that's just, I mean, I have so many of those boxes that right now I just have in drawers that I use for organization now, because I printed so many throughout this process. Yeah. And I was like, what do I do with all these boxes that they're not the final product? And so, yeah, I just got them in drawers.
Rushed it. Packaging design is one of my favorite things of all time. I think I've talked about this before on here. I get caught off guard sometimes with how good packaging is that I forget to talk about how good the toy is. And then on top of it all, you create this slip cover that is absolutely incredible with the different variants that you can get on the back, which I'm assuming all at random.
Yeah.
Okay. The legendary, has it ever been revealed what color that is?
I have revealed one, because there, I'll give it away on this podcast. There are going, well, one of them isn't made yet.
Okay.
Because I have to fine tune the process to make it, I wanted it to be a very specific way.
Yeah.
But one of them I did reveal, and there's going to be three total that are legendary. And each one of the legendaries, they're the only one, they're one-offs. So, if you find one, you can know nobody else is going to have it. On my Instagram, I did post like a little opening of the box, and instead of a white figure inside, it's kind of a translucent red.
Oh, cool. I do like that a lot, man, because everything about this toy speaks to like, you need to buy more of them.
That's the idea.
Yeah. It's like, I do. Yes, I do. So you've created this toy, you have packaging, you have all this done. Still kind of new in the community. And so the space probably feels, I remember what it was like being new and doing that kind of stuff.
We interrupt this broadcast of Toys on Tap to bring you this. Meanwhile, in a galaxy of bootleg treasures.
DOV2, we have engine failure. We must crash land on DKE Toy Planet. Oh my, we're doomed.
Wait, salvation. Hooray, we're saved, DOV2. Limited edition custom artist made action figures and DKE toys.
Check out www.dketoys.com for a full catalog.
Hooray for custom action figures.
DKE.
I think the question kind of centers around like, when you see where you fit in the community, do you fit more in like 3D sculpting and design, 3D printing, toy making? Like, where do you find that you fit most in one of these categories?
I think as of right now, I guess I fall more into the 3D printing stuff. Though it's kind of hard to say for sure, because for me, I would have, 3D printing is just the way I figured out how to do this particular toy. I have dabbled in resin casting. I have I've sculpted hand sculpted parts, and I've used like 3D scanners to scan sculpts to make parts of things, not for this particular toy, but for other kind of practice projects, if you want to call them that. But 3D printing ended up being what I really utilized for this particular outcome. And so through that process, I had to learn a lot about 3D printing and what it was capable of. And so that's kind of the side of that world that I'm on most.
When you, I mean, 3D printing is such a vast community as well.
Yeah.
And so we're talking like FDM and resin and all the different resins and stuff. Is this FDM printed?
It's both FDM and resin. So the armor pieces are resin, and the skeleton is FDM.
You really are a toy maker. You couldn't just do one. We have to keep it going. Yeah.
I couldn't. I wanted the ultra smooth for the armor. Even using like a small nozzle, the layer lines, I still see them, and I'm like, I just want that real smooth texture. And so, yeah.
Yeah. For being a first toy, how proud of this project are you? I think that we forget to ask newer toy makers this, and no one asked me when I made a toy, which now looking back, what a bummer. How proud of this piece of work are you?
I mean, I'm super proud of it. I literally play with mine every day, yeah. Like, you know, just, and just realize like I made this, you know, it's something that I came up with and made, and it's real now. And in the end, for me, it's like, I want to share that, you know, I want people to want to buy it, of course, because I would love to do this full time for a living, you know, but if that never happens, I'm just going to keep going making more toys at this point, because it's satisfying, like beyond satisfying.
Absolutely. I think that's the hard part to kind of describe to people, like how satisfying is this really?
Yeah.
And the answer is you could not even begin to understand how satisfying it is to make something.
Right. Yeah.
With the name being Zero. Mm-hmm. Leads me to believe there's going to be other numbers coming. That is where we're headed.
Yeah, I mean,
okay,
they won't be named after their numbers, but okay. Yes. So the reason why he's named Zero is because, you know, I mentioned before I tried to do a Kickstarter a while back, canceled it, and when I came back to this project ready to really go at it again, I opened up Kickstarter ready to launch this project, and I was like, I don't think I even want to do Kickstarter this time around. Like I just want to get this toy out there and make it available. So I was like, well, originally with the Kickstarter, the idea was to feature one figure that was finished. But the Kickstarter was supposed to fund all of Series 1, which is going to be a handful of figures. I don't even know how many yet. I don't want to be too overzealous. Mm-hmm. I wanted to create something special first. So Zero actually is a pre-series. So it's a standalone figure in its own series of colors. And then Series 1 will be a new set of figures that are all compatible with Zero, but they will be their own series.
Okay. Which it's almost like Glios compatibility. Like you're making these figures that can interchange, yeah. Which is awesome. And so with making this figure, being proud of it and all the other stuff, I think the question I ask every artist is looking over T-Cat and looking over the toy that you have created and like all the time spent, what's next in your toy venture?
Well, definitely more Fidgy Figs.
Yeah.
I've got too many ideas, just with Fidgy Figs, but now that I've learned so much in the process of creating Zero, that all these other little ideas start coming in and I'm just like, no, maybe later, you know, mm-hmm. I need to focus on this. But I would like to also develop something less complex, you know, and just something kind of simple to put out there as well. So I have a couple ideas that are there, but mostly I want to get series one finished before mm-hmm. I dive into working on any other toys.
Absolutely. Dude, and we are here for it. We absolutely cannot wait, because this is to be the first toy coming out with all the moving pieces, all the joints, all the magnets, everything, and it working seamlessly. Holy hell, you have something coming your way.
Yeah, jeez. Well, I feel like the hardest part is done. Now I just need to make each figure special, but I've got all of the inner workings and the mechanics figured out. So we should be good to go.
Dude, it's so good. It's so good. Thank you so much for sending me one.
You're welcome.
Yeah, it's an honor to get toys sent to me, and especially with a message that's like, just this is for you.
Yeah.
Like, awesome.
Well, I mean, ultimately, the main purpose, I think, of a toy in general, not just mine, but it's to bring happiness and joy. And like, I can't think of a better way to give somebody a little happiness is just to be like, here's a cool little toy for you, you know?
Heck yeah. Dude, thank you so much for coming on Toys on Tap and talking.
Thank you. Thanks for all having this me. Stuff.
We have the last bit where you get to share all the ways that people can get a hold of you, get in touch, all that stuff. So please plug away. How do people get these figures? How do they get the legendary one? All of those things.
Well, obviously I'm on all the socials, TCAT Toys, pretty simple. I have TCATToys.com. That's where you can actually get your own. And as far as the legendaries are concerned, you just got to be lucky. You just got to be lucky.
Heck yeah. Do you, I mean, as a last question to this, I just thought about this. Do you plan on going factory made with this at some point?
You know, I thought about that a lot. That was the original plan.
Okay.
That was definitely the original plan. But the more I do it this way, the more I love the idea of keeping everything small, mm-hmm. you know, and, not to get too detailed into things at the end, but ultimately I would like to bring on help, you know, extra hands to help me do this, but not in the traditional sense. I don't want to hire employees. I want to bring on, I guess you might call them apprentices, and, you know, people that are just interested in doing this, and I'll teach them and show them everything that I do, and they can learn every aspect of it, from the CAD, the 3D printing, all of the aspects that I learned to do this, they can learn, with the intention, not that they work with me and for me forever, that, you know, eventually they go off and do their own thing. So
that's awesome.
But that's how I plan on scaling it, is that way.
Yeah. That's so good. It's like passing on knowledge to the next people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you again for coming on and rocking the house with Toys on Tap.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I mean, it's been awesome. I'm an absolute honor.
Heck yeah.